Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Clayton Bates, the go-to Shopify expert dedicated to transforming e-commerce stores into high-converting powerhouses. With a knack for turning browsers into buyers, Clayton has been the driving force behind Inspire Small Business since 2018. His journey in e-commerce started back in 2008 with Cards and Collectibles R Us, equipping him with firsthand experience in what makes an online business succeed. To prove it, Clayton's expertise has earned him dozens of awards, rave reviews, plus he's a certified Shopify expert and partner who applies his deep understanding of digital sales to help Shopify store owners drastically increase their sales. So I've asked Clayton to join us here today to share his story and help more of us turn clicks into customers. So Clayton, thank you for joining us, my friend. How you doing?
Thanks for having me. That was probably the best intro ever someone's done for me. But yeah, I'm doing good. Hopefully you're doing good too.
Yeah, no, I'm running a bit late. It was one of those instances where everything was set and ready to go, and I just stopped watching the clock. And Clayton is so patient, and I just love your vibe. You got a good energy, so I'm excited for this call. Before we get into this, though, how did you even get into marketing and sales? I talked about what was the company's name? Before even that, like, how did you even get started in marketing and sales? Is this a family trade? Were your parents in marketing and sales?
I always think it like it's a sliding door moment that happened when I was in high school. A drink machine was broken. I went to get a can of Coke. I put my money in, seven cans fell out, and I sold all seven in 5 minutes, just stood there and sold all of them. And then something sparked in my brain that I could sit next to the drink machine at school and sell cans of drink. I sold tens of thousands of dollars worth of drinks when I was at high school, over about 3 or 4 year period. So that sort of started my brain on being an entrepreneur and stuff like that.
I
I
love
left school. When I actually left school, crazy enough, I went and started working at a job, and I was earning less money at a full-time job than I did at school, which it just seemed like I was earning $30 less than roughly what I was earning at school. I went and worked for a few years. I seen a packet of football cards in a news agency in 2008. I bought some, started collecting them, thought, oh, maybe I could do a business on the side doing that. It got made redundant at my job, and I thought, screw it, I've been going pretty good at the selling the cards, so I'm going to start my own business. I had a little kiosk for a few years. One also, I've learned a lot of lessons in both of those businesses that helped this business. But basically, after about 2.5, 3 years, I made a pretty big mistake in that business that made me had a so I had to shut down that business, and I went back into working again. And I always loved the cards, so a few years later I decided that I was just going to do it on the side. So I ended up having a pretty good job, and then I had the card business on the side. 2014, I needed a website. I tried to reach out to people to rebuild my Shopify website. A lot of people which wanted to charge me $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 for a website, and I thought, should I learn how to do it myself, or should I invest that money into should I pay them or invest the money back into stock? I decided to learn myself. That the big lesson I've learned from that is if I hired one of those agencies, I probably would have made $200,000 or $300,000 extra. With what I know about websites now, I easily would have made $200,000 or $300,000 extra from hiring an agency, but I wouldn't be where I am now. I wouldn't have learned how to build a website, stuff like that. 2018, 2017, I actually had a really good year. I achieved nearly every goal I wanted to in my life in 2017. It was like an awesome year. 2018, I was basically goalless and started to spiral a bit out of control. Like I had this good job that I hated. Had this business on the side that went all right, sort of thing like that. And I just felt a bit lost. And I was like, what do I want to do in my life? And the only thing I enjoyed about the cards by that point was building the website. I was a bit burnt out from that business. And I thought, what if I start an agency building websites? And I ended up starting the agency. The first year was like very hard. It was very hard to get clients and stuff like that. I think the only reason I got the first few clients that first year is because I'd actually had my own store and I'd made money on Shopify and stuff. So those people were like, oh, he's done what we're trying to do thing.
Yeah.
Come within a week of going bankrupt, decided no matter what, if I lose my house or whatever happened, I'm going to make this business work. And literally that night, my whole business changed and it basically exploded for the last 4 years. Crazy when I nearly gave up, and now I've helped generate tens of millions of dollars in extra revenue for our clients. We've worked with 600 people. We've won heaps of awards and stuff like that. We have stuff. There's all these things. Imagine if I gave up. Yeah, it's crazy.
They always say after the darkest time of night, the sun starts to shine. That's the whole, I love that. Wow, the night you committed, things started to turn around. How did you know things were turning around? Like, why can you say that?
So when I worked out that I had about a week before I was going to lose my house and everything like that, Shopify had already messaged me by this time. So Shopify actually reached out to me around this time when I was at my lowest sort of thing. And they'd asked me if I wanted to be a Shopify expert. And the reason they found me is because I'd posted nearly 1,000 times on Shopify community forum in that year, giving people free advice. And this is another thing, like sometimes when you put good things out into the world, it might not happen today or tomorrow, but good things come back. And if I hadn't have done that 950 posts, the one of the bosses at Shopify wouldn't have seen me. So they reached out. I had to go through a very long 2-3 month period of answering all their questions, giving them examples and stuff. So that process had already started. So I knew that eventually I was probably going to be a Shopify expert. So that would help. I'd got one or two people, some good results sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So there was like, you could see like the makings of the business was about to explode sort of thing. I was just going to run out of money. And lose everything sort of thing. And I just went, you know what? Like this is the other thing as well. It was at the end of the year sort of thing. And I'd put a plan together, how to make $100,000 the next year. And I decided I've got this plan to make $100,000 the next year. I know if I do certain things, I can do it. There's some things coming that is probably going to help. And then I went, screw it. I don't care. And then like literally that night, someone said yes to the best quote I'd ever sent. Then the next day I sent a even better quote than that. And they said yes to that. And then two months later, Shopify contacted me and they said, look, would never normally make someone like you a Shopify expert, but you'd given so much free value. We can tell you really care and you want to do good things. So don't let us down. We're going to make you a Shopify expert. And I was like, no dramas. I still haven't let them down to this day. Not long after that, 4 people left video reviews. So people were like really happy with the work I'd done. So 4 of my clients left video reviews. So you think now I'm sending video reviews. I'm a Shopify expert. I'd got some reviews. And then 3 months later, COVID hit. And then I was getting like 5,000 of leads, like probably 5,000 leads a month to build websites. Nearly gave up. 3 months later, I'm getting 5,000 leads a month.
Yeah, that's intense. What would you recommend to someone who's starting out or struggling right now? Like they've got this vision, like you've had it, have a successful business. Maybe they're having that night where they're facing some sort of beast in their life and it's snarling at them out of the corner. What would you recommend to someone starting out or struggling in that scenario?
So the thing that helped me a lot, I don't know if you've watched that video, The Secret. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, I help one of the gurus from that movie. One of my track records is I helped a company do over $3 million in under 8 months. And it was John Assaraf, who's the vision board guy. I actually was at his house and he took out the vision board that that was his contribution to that documentary. So I know the movie.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. One of the other things I always believed a year before I was a Shopify expert, I watched a YouTube video about a Shopify expert. And I was always like, I know one day I'm going to be a Shopify expert. So I always believed it. And then it come to me. Not that I'm full hard on that, but I was watching The Secret and the guy with the book, he said that he wrote a check to himself for $1 million. And then he put it on his wall or something like that and looked at it each day. And then he ended up making $1 million or nearly $1 million or something. And I started to try to think about how my brain works and stuff. I think that quarter, the last quarter of the year, I'd made $8,000 or something. And I think in the whole year, I'd made 10,000 or something like that, right? So not that much, right? And I was like, what goal can I set for myself that I believe I can achieve? So it's got to be a little bit more than what I've done before, but it can't be like crazy. So I set a goal, quarter one, I need to earn $15,000. Quarter two, 30,000. Quarter three, 45,000, and whatever quarter, I can't remember what I put for quarter four, whatever. I should get the picture. I took a picture of it. And I knew that if I could make 15,000 in quarter one, I'd be unstoppable. And quarter one, I made $15,000. So I believed in myself. So when I got to 15,000, I think it was 15,500, I was like, holy shit, I can do this. And then the second quarter, I made $29,000. So I was $1,000 short of 30,000. But do you think I cared?
Yeah,
I was like, I've got this. I can do it. And then something in me was like, I can do this. So I think one of the things is if you set a goal that is a little bit out of reach, but if you can achieve it and believe in yourself, get that momentum to keep pushing forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then even last year, some of the weeks we had last year, it's like I looked at the week and I was like, thought back to those moments, and it's just the difference is unbelievable. It's like crazy sort of thing.
Yeah. I know exactly. First time I made more money in a day than I'd made in a year. You're just like, man, I used to live on that in a year. Like, what craziness. Yeah. No, I love that. And I think you said a couple of really important things that just like you just setting a goal isn't enough. It has to mean something to you. There has to be an emotional driver behind it, your why. And I think that's a big part, exactly what you were saying. Because I wrote down a goal you can believe in that you can achieve. A goal I believe I can achieve is what you said. And you also said belief in myself, believe in my. And I feel like those are two really important things, that it has to be a goal you believe you can achieve, not wish or hope, but that you believe and you see a plan in your mind on how to accomplish it, and that you believe in yourself. I think that's a great thing. The other part that I love, and it was unsaid, and it was, I'm just going to open them. You didn't say it directly, but you were really involved in a community. And I think that is a very important thing as well. Dan Kennedy had this thing, you can't do business sitting on your ass. Like everybody wants to automate everything, where they automate customer service and they automate sales and marketing, automate all this stuff. But all the money comes from people. The money comes from people to solve problems for people. The people checking your automated systems are people. It's still all people. You can apply leverage. But I think that part, you talked about how you had engaged with 1,000, or you'd made 1,000 posts in the Shopify community in a year. And it was all giving value and being a contributing member of the community, not a parasite. And I think that you connected a passion that you had with something people needed. And at once it clicked how you could share that passion to the community in a marketplace exchange. Anyways, I'm rambling a little bit, but I just feel like I wanted to spell that out, because I feel like you said all that and it's demonstrated in your story, but someone could easily miss that if they don't pay attention to that part, that you have to go where the people were. You were trying to build Shopify stores for Shopify people, and you were engaged in the Shopify community. You were still struggling, but because you had the passion and you were genuinely trying to help people, that I think really shone through, and that you had goals that were in line with doing that, that you believed that you could. I think all of that is some of the magic. Because I worked with John Assaraf, and he sells a lot of the retrain your brain stuff. And I think there's a really strong argument for that. If you're running a marathon, if your mind gives up, your body will not carry you across the finish line, but your body can give up and your mind will carry you. And I agree with that. However, I don't think it's a one-trick pony. I think it's more Think and Grow Rich, where there's the 13 principles. You know what I mean? I think they work in unison. And that's part of why I wanted to point out the different elements that I think were present in your story. So now what are you doing now? Is you still focus on, is it building the websites? What is it that your agency does for people? Is it still mostly focused on redesigning the stores, or are you doing other things for people?
Yeah, so we're doing three things. So the first one is we do free video audits of people's websites. So even to this day, nearly 6 years later, we're giving free value to people. So if someone messages us, we'll do a free audit. I've actually done 2,000 of them now. So we'll go through a website, 10, 20 minutes, give some value and stuff. If people want to jump on a call, they can. They don't have to. They can just get it for free, no dramas. And then the other two things we do is we build websites from scratch. And then the other one is we rebuild websites. I'd say probably 75% of the work we do is rebuild websites. We don't do as many from scratch anymore. And then funny you said about community, because we're actually starting to build our community. So we're doing some tests and stuff. One of the things that helped my business quite a lot last year is that I got in a community with agency owners. And I probably 4x my business just from being in a community with agency owners. So it really helped me quite a lot last year. So I want to try to build a community where I can give value and help people as well. So that's something I can't even sleep as I keep thinking about how cool it would be to build a community and give a lot of value to people. So that's something we're working on this year.
And what are the biggest mistakes people are making trying to sell things online that you see?
Definitely, like in e-commerce, I always think there's three key things. So one is the type of traffic going to your website. Then the next one is like how your website flows and all that sort of stuff and how it's built. And then the next one's images. So those three things are like really important. And then when you break it down to the actual website, there's four key things that a lot of people make mistakes on. So a lot of people don't understand how to build their homepage, which that's like very important. Large amount of people go to your homepage. The second one is a product page. You need to have all the information about the product, build trust and benefits if you can. The third one, site navigation. So that's very important. The more products you have, the more important site navigation is. So it's not as important on one product as it is in 1,000. My old website actually had 10,000 products. I'm very like, if you have lots of products, I totally get the what you go through, but it's very hard sometimes with large amounts. The fourth one is the checkout. A lot of people forget to add their logo and their colors in the checkout. And if there's a disconnect between your website and your checkout when someone's going to pay, their conversions will go down for sure, 100%. 5 to 20% of the conversion will go down if that happens, most likely. And then the fifth one's mobile friendly. Like these days, 50 to 90% of your traffic is coming from mobile. Most websites we work on, I'd say 80%+ of the websites we work on, their traffic is more than 65% on mobile.
Yeah.
Normally, the only websites with 50-50 split is like websites that are selling products over $1,000, or they're for like elderly people, or where it makes sense where their market is on a desktop. So right. Most websites is mobile, quite a lot of mobile.
Got it. Yeah, that's actually an interesting. Let's hop into that for a second. You said sites selling over $1,000 products. Is that, can you sell like multi-$1,000 products through a Shopify store without a call, is that something you see commonly? Are people going and putting down their credit card to buy a $5,000 thing?
I don't think it's like every day someone comes to me with like products over 1,000, but there's definitely, I'd say probably 2 or 3 out of 100 people will have like products over 1,000. So a good example is like the tool niche. So imagine tradies, they have to go get tools and stuff like that. They're going to like, the average order value is going to be like $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 sometimes. Some of those websites, it comes down to the price if they're cheaper than other places. And there's lots of different things. And then if you've built up a following on social media, you have to, the higher the product price, the more trust and stuff you have to build.
Right. So, how do you build trust?
There's lots of different things. So reviews is a good one. I've noticed photo reviews work a lot better these days. I think slowly we're moving into a world where video reviews are better. And I think people can tell when they're paid video reviews. Yeah. So if someone's like, yeah, I really like this product. So they're a bit like, nervous or something, it actually comes across better sometimes because you can tell they're not like paid actor.
I forget, there was a term, it was like the something effect, and it was for Instagram paid ads, and it was saying that if it looked like you did a selfie on your iPhone, it converted better, but if your ads on Instagram looked too like they were from a studio, it wouldn't work because there was no trust, there was no authenticity.
Yeah, so there's lots of different things, and then your images are big. So if your site flows and has nice images and things like that, with and it looks branded, it builds a lot more trust too, because it looks professional. It doesn't look like you just, I think a lot of things people used to do or used to say worked, I don't feel worked that much anymore. Right. So it's more about images looking branded, having a nice clean website sort of thing. So that's what I think works really well.
All right. So the three keys are the type of traffic, the site flow, and the images. I think the type of traffic is really important. I have my own opinions on this. Can you explain why you say that? Why do you say the types of traffic are important?
Because you can get like 10,000 views to your website and no one buy anything. If people are being sent from some random blog that doesn't really make sense and clicking over to your website, they're not going to convert, sort of thing. Right. If it's like weird traffic coming over. But if someone's like on Instagram and they're like, oh, this is a really cool video about this product, and then they click through your bio into your website, like they're heaps more likely to buy something. Or if you run an ad and they really resonate with that ad, and they're more likely to go there, sort of thing. Yeah. So sometimes you can't just look at your traffic and be like, oh, I'm getting all this traffic, but what if it's the wrong traffic? Like,
yeah, we're ranking for these five keywords, but one of them's about knee pain and you're selling teenage you're selling clothes to teeny boppers. Yeah, I love that. So it's a good way is pre-frame people. Like you might be able to trick people with that whole headline, one weird trick to whatever. But then when they go to your sites, the mental space they're in doesn't match what your site's trying to do. It's like someone's outside and they see whatever, an archery, but I don't even know what to call it, an archery studio. And you go inside and it turns into a bowling alley. And you're like, and they've got like a little archery thing on the side, but it's really rinky dink. You're like, oh, that's not what I thought this was. You know, like that, I think that's an important point to make. Do you find the more successful, what types of traffic do the more successful sites use? Is it SEO, organic SEO? Is it affiliate traffic? Is it paid ads? Is it social media, organic? What do you feel if people had to bet the farm on mastering one, two, three things, what would they be?
I feel like it's Instagram. Lately, it's a lot harder to grow on Instagram. So probably 1 or 2 years ago, it was easier. It's just getting harder and harder, sort of thing. If you're really good with video, TikTok can work, but most people struggle with video. Most of our clients, where it aligns very well, is we build websites that work really well when you have an Instagram following. So if you think about it, a lot of people, if they've grown on Instagram, they have a lot of like lifestyle type images and nice images and things like that. So a lot of the websites we build, we try to flow from Instagram to the website. So we have like lots of nice images and things like that. So probably in my experience, I just feel like Instagram is the best platform. But then I've also seen a couple of people really nail TikTok, but a lot of people struggle to do TikTok, I think.
Yeah, got it. Okay. So Instagram organic or Instagram paid ads?
Organic probably. But then the thing is like Instagram's a slow burn too. You have to be like consistent for a long period of time before you start to get traffic. What I've noticed with followers on Instagram is that when you get to about 1 or 2,000 followers, you normally get inconsistent sales through your store. And then when you get to about 5 to 10,000 followers, that's when you're probably going to be making like 100,000 a year at least. So you start to get like really consistent followers and stuff. That's not true in every single niche, but on an average, I think it's about that. And then when you get to 100,000, like normally it's like really life-changing at 100,000 followers. Yeah.
So 1,000 is you're maybe got roof and ramen. You're not signing on for Lamborghini payments. No. 10,000 followers a month. You've got a good income. You can take a vacation. And at 100,000 followers, now you're getting yourself the Lambo. Is that what you're saying?
Probably, yeah. But then some niches, they'll have 30,000 followers and not make any money. Sometimes it depends on how you built the following too.
Yeah.
So if the type of people following you isn't the right type, then it's you're not going to make any money. So there's one or two niches that are like that, where they can get followers very easily, but then those followers normally don't convert into like customers sort of thing. So for example, like people that photographers and stuff that take awesome photos and stuff, a lot of people will follow. Like I've ran into multiple people like this, like 30, 40, 50, 100,000 followers, and they've got a lot of people that love the images they take. And then they start a website where it's like they're printing their images onto prints and things like that, and then it doesn't convert the same way as like other niches sort of thing.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I had a question, I just forgot what it was going to be, but okay. So 1,000, 10,000, 100,000. Do you see a lot of people doing paid ads?
Most people we work with have built organic following.
Yeah.
But some people we've worked with are doing ads and stuff. It really depends on the margins on your product, I think. So if you're like selling something for $100 and it costs you $60, it's probably going to be hard to run ads.
Yeah.
But some of the people where it's like they paid $20, they sell it for $200. If there's big margins in there. Some of our clients even just try to break even on the ads and build up an email list, and then they make it long term, like long tail.
Yeah.
Like one of our clients, they're doing about 100,000 a month, and they pretty much break even on all their ads, but then they're doing large amounts of email marketing. So their returning customer rate is like very high.
Yeah.
So they're thinking long term sort of thing.
I was going to ask, how important is email marketing to a Shopify store?
I think when you get to a certain level, it's super important. So I don't always say this, but I said it a lot of the times for many years to people, is that if you have a low subscriber count right now, if you practice email marketing, like just use some free stuff from Shopify or things like that, and start to get into a flow of like once a month, maybe do an email out to your 100 subscribers or 300 or whatever. If you keep being consistent, as your business grows, your subscribers are going to grow and you're going to get better at the email marketing. So by the time you're making like 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, 50,000 a month, you're pretty good at email marketing by then, most likely. Because probably about 10,000 a month is like normally when email marketing starts to be a lot more important, I think.
I think there's good truth to that, because you have to have a consistent, steady source of fresh blood into the system. Even if you're fantastic, I helped one Shopify store client. I don't necessarily specialize in Shopify, but this is a personal friend that asked me to help him out with some stuff. We improved their retention 106% with email marketing, but you got to keep new blood coming into the system, because even if your retention is flawless, people are going to move, they're going to change interests, they're going to pass away, they're hit a different phase of life. So you got to keep adding fresh blood. And I think that's a really important message that you made. That's a good goal. Get to 10,000 a month first. Make sure your refunds are, it's my opinion, I heard this from the late, great Gary Halbert. He was saying, sometimes people brag about how low their refunds are. I tell them that's stupid. It means they're leaving so much money on the table, because you want it to be easy for people to try your product. You don't want refunds to be super high, but you should be accepting a certain amount of refunds, because it means you're getting people to at least try it that it's not a fit for. You're marketing and selling your stuff decently when you have a certain amount of refunds. Otherwise, you're like too shy to sell your stuff. And so you have to make sure that the refunds are for the right reason, perhaps, is what we say. So get enough front-end sales, get the refunds comfortable, and then you can obsess over retention. I think that's powerful. Are there any habits that you feel with the more successful Shopify store owners that you think are super important?
I think there's two things. So one, just being consistent. So what I've noticed, a lot of the top people, they're just super consistent. If they post twice a week on Instagram, they always post twice a week on Instagram. They're very consistent. They keep showing up. I think that's one of the things, like if you keep showing up and keep pushing that momentum ball, it just ends up snowballing sort of thing. So that's what I see happen with a lot of people. Even some people, like you think about, I started working with them 4 or 5 years ago. We're still working together. They might have had 1,000 followers 4 years ago, and they just kept showing up, and they've got like 50,000 followers now, 100,000 followers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they kept doing email marketing back then. They still do it now. So I think like just being consistent, but you still have to go down the right path, because I've actually seen some people that are consistent, but they keep going down the wrong path. So you have to evaluate where you're going sometimes. But that's definitely like one of the really big things, I think. And then what I've actually noticed with speaking to some people when we're building websites and stuff on the very big businesses sort of thing, like millions of dollars and stuff, most of those people, they don't care about the money. They care about the time.
Yeah.
So they're more focused on how much of their time is being taken up, like maybe dealing with our agency or whatever, rather than the money. So it's basically more like send a quote and they're like, bang, yep, whatever, paid. And then it's more they care more. They don't want to, their time to be taken up. So yeah, right. I think more of the big people care more about time than money.
I can attest to that. I remember being confused because I had a client that was paying me a lot of money and the meetings were so short. And I felt like paying me so much money, especially for me at the time, like I should be like cutting their hair. You know what I mean? Like, let me trim your toenails. It's just a lot of money to pay. And then you say it's almost the exact opposite. It's because they're hired you because they're confident in the result that you'll give them. And so they're almost the best clients because they know what needs to be done. They know that you'll deliver the results. And so that's it at that point. They need to focus on those things. And I think that's a really good tip. Is there any low-hanging fruit that you, again, for most, this may be a bit of a clickbait kind of question, but what are some of the easiest things that most people don't do, but they could do to really give their store a boost?
Probably like those things I was saying before. Definitely images. I think people struggle with images sometimes. Oh, actually, you know what? I actually just thought of another really good idea, right? If you paid someone to build your website a year ago, right? Always be thinking about, is my website the best it can be? Because sometimes people get caught up in this, I paid someone a year ago, I don't want to pay again. But sometimes things change, things evolve, right? And if they spent the money again a year later, they could make millions of dollars, actually, like literally millions of dollars sort of thing. So one good example, we worked with someone in the UK. They'd paid someone a year before to build the website. They're making £1 million a year, right? They were very hesitant, ended up paying us to rebuild it again. They went from £1 million a year to £3 million a year after we did the website. Probably £1 million extra was because of the website.
Yeah.
So a lot of people get caught up in this. I spent money a year or two ago. They just keep dragging it out. They don't want to reinvest in their website. And sometimes you just have to. There's so much money you could be losing. Like,
yeah.
I don't think people realize how much money they can potentially be losing. Same with the situation. I didn't want to hire an agency like in 2014, and I probably lost $200,000 or $300,000.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's one of those things. You got to always be open to maybe going a different direction with the website or they're evolving and stuff like that.
And knowing industry stats and how your site compares, because it's one thing to hit a home run with a site that converts like crazy, but it's much easier to know what your industry benchmarks are and how you measure up. And if you're below, or even if you're just average, it's probably worth the time, energy, and investment to do some testing to try to improve on that. I have two stories that back up what you're saying. One was a client that I was helping, and we did a split test. I've helped companies double their business just by fixing the website, like just testing a new headline. I don't do web design, but just new copy, new headline, new hook, something, right? And one example we were doing, there was a webinar, and we split tested two different opt-in pages, and one got twice as many leads, but half the number of total sales at the end of it all. And the other one got half as many leads, but more sales. Now, if we had not been tracking everything through to the end, some people are like, oh, more leads. Like even that was even one of the meetings that we had. Oh, we're getting more leads. Okay, let's cancel the test. And I was like, no, we got to track this through all the way to sales because you just don't know just because you get more leads. And one of the differences was a dropdown, name, email, dropdown. And by getting that dropdown, that custom personalized data, we were converting way more people versus getting rid of it type thing. And that's just one example. Another one is actually a good friend of mine, past guest of the show, Jermaine Griggs. And he's been basically an online piano teacher here in play.com. And he was teaching people how to play music without reading sheet music. And he started off at his church. And this is early days of the internet. He put up a website. So when people bought, they'd go download it and print it out at home. And he figured out that he could maybe sell some online. He was selling 12 a month. And Corey Rudel, who's long passed away, was doing like online marketing training. And he got some of his stuff. And just by reorganizing his website, he went from 12 cents sales a month to starting getting 12 sales a day. And that was how he kicked off. And like, he's done over $1 million for the last 15 years. He's had almost some 8-figure years type thing, just teaching people how to play piano online. That's just you're a music teacher. For a lot of people, they just think, oh, I like a music teacher, local studio type thing. And he's got thousands of people subscribing to him. So it really does pay to test your message, your offer, and who you're marketing to. I think that's a really powerful lesson.
Yeah, we did a test on my website as well recently, because for a long time, this thing kept going over in my head because I hadn't updated my website for 3 years. And I remember this lady I knew, her husband makes coffee, right? And she'd be like, oh, I always make him coffee when he gets home. And I'm like, it didn't make sense because he must be really good at making coffee. And she was always like, yeah, you do it all day. You don't want to go home and do it. And I always felt like my website was like that. Like, I build websites all the time.
Yeah.
So I don't want to fix mine.
Yeah.
And I always thought, I really suck at building service-based websites. Like, I really understand how to sell a product, but not a service. And then I got one of my staff to start doing it. And I was like, you know what? I need to dedicate a lot of my time to do it. And then when we rebuilt my website, I get 10 times the amount of leads as I did before. And it's like just a little thing, even just my thing, like it's crazy what these little things can do. I think I did it about 6 months ago. If we rebuilt my website again, I'd probably like 10x the leads again, sort of thing. So even my own self is like the same thing.
Yeah, the shoemaker with holes in his shoes. Tell me, I know exactly what you're talking about there. Where do you think things are going? Because we've had a lot of geopolitical issues, supply chain issues. There's all sorts of censorship happening online and with social media platforms. We've had some major technological upsets. Where do you see things in 5-10 years?
I think it's hard to even think about 5 years from now, because like technology and everything just keeps evolving so fast now. Like, things just keep getting better and better. I remember being on a podcast like about a year ago, and I was like, oh, apps for your website is going to be really big, because there's new apps where you could download apps for the businesses that sell products onto your phone and then send notifications to their phone and stuff. And I thought, oh, this is like game changer, seeing people making money. And then like AI come out, and it's now AI is like crazy sort of thing. I always just think you got to just see what's working and test different things out and things like that. I'm not really sure where things are going. I'm a bit on the fence on a few different things. But the one thing I do believe is, if people are scared of AI, I think AI is just like when the tractor come.
Yep.
Farmers were worried about the tractor, but now like things are so much better because of the tractor and machinery and stuff like that. Humans always find a way. We always evolve. Even if AI takes people's jobs and stuff like that, we will always find a way. We'll always be okay.
Yeah. I love that example. I never thought or heard that example, because I say the same thing whenever I talk. I say they're all just tools. Unless us as a species intend to roll over and die, we're always going to want to drive the bus. And the bus is a tool. And you brought up the farmer example. My example was calculators. When calculators came out, companies and people used to have teams of people, mathematicians, doing the number crunching. We're all going to get replaced by robots. We're going to have a bunch of people that need to go on universal basic income. And that never happened. And then spreadsheets came out. And now we're all replaced, because you can replace a whole department with a spreadsheet with formulas. And then you just have to punch in monkey button push numbers. And you don't have to worry about it. And again, it never happened. Same thing, cars, like all this sort of stuff. And at the end of the day, it's all tools. Like, some people do need to upskill and evolve. But at the end of the day, they're all just tools. And accountants used to have to do all the math. But all calculators and spreadsheets did was they made the non-productive ones lose their excuse for why they were so slow and did poor work, and it made the more productive ones more productive. And the other ones just either had to up level or find something they were more passionate about. Yeah, I think that's, yeah, I really love that. Yeah, this has been
I was just going to say, imagine expert copywriter with AI now.
Yeah.
Imagine how good their stuff's going to be because they know what to ask her and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you can really take it to the next level. Imagine 5 people using AI now over 5 normal people a year ago.
Yep.
Yeah. You got to look at the advantages sometimes, I think.
Yep.
So
I talk about this with my team. We're smaller now, but my wife, even with her business, at one point she had something like 26 staff. And often when people get sick, I talk to them. I'm a health nut. And a lot of the stuff, they'll talk to me and they'll do some things and they go see a doctor and they come back. They're like, oh, I already knew you already told me. I could have saved myself all the time, energy and money type thing. And it's not that doctors are bad. It's that a lot of them see so many people. They just reference the books. A lot of these people, right? And so you talk about a great doctor that has access to AI. My point in saying that is that, it's the whole point of the tool. A good doctor will know what to check, what side effects to look for, what contraindications, that sort of stuff. But a lot of that stuff's available to people. But the problem is that the time and the energy and the focus and even the passion to look it up for themselves can be tough. That's great advice. So what else? Types of traffic, site flow, images, and the 4 site keys, the homepage, the product page, the site nav, the checkout, and it has to be mobile friendly. What are the top problems? Because we have a bit of time left. What are the top problems most people make with a homepage? Like what? Why is a homepage so important?
First of all, it's probably on nearly every website, the most viewed page on the website. A lot of people are being pushed there. What I think a lot of people make a big mistake on is they don't understand why someone's going to their homepage. For example, there's 2 really big reasons why someone would go to a homepage. The first one is they Googled your business name and went to your homepage. The second one is they found you on social media, and most people have a link to their homepage on social media. And you think about those 2 types of people, right? If they're Googling your business name, they already know about you and what you do most likely, right? If they found you on social media, they have a good idea of what you're about. So why not make it the first couple of sections on your website, on your homepage about selling? Because people already know what's going on. So if you're making it easy for them to find something on your website, that normally converts a lot better. So for example, if you go, let's just say you have 20 products or something, right? You go banner with a button that, like, quick message button that goes to the all products page. Then you have maybe 4 best-selling products or 4 new arrivals. Yep. And then under that, you have categories with nice images. So those 3 sections combined with your navigation makes it super easy for someone to find what they're looking for.
Yeah.
Now, the thing as well is that there's going to be a lot of people on the fence as well.
Yep.
So that's why the middle of the page, you build trust connection. So you have some reviews. You might have an image with text, really nice image, a little bit of story linked to the about page. Quick little thing about the about for websites. I think back in like 2016, 17, 18, leading with the story worked a lot better, but I think it doesn't work as well now. So it's more like you have to have that in the middle. People mm-hmm. that really want to read that will go read that sort of thing. Not that many people go to about pages, 1 in 5 out of 100. The type of people that go to about page and read the whole thing, they're about 50, 60% conversion rate. So if someone reads your whole about, it's super highly likely they'll go buy something. But a lot of people don't go to that page. So people don't really think to update that. And then the bottom of the homepage is more about, I normally have 8 or 12 products, maybe some sale products at the bottom, Instagram feed, something like that. But if someone makes it halfway down your homepage, they're probably not going to buy anything. So that's why I'm just like sale collection, Instagram feed, they might go follow your Instagram, come back later sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of it's around building, structuring the homepage. If you have 1 product, the homepage is completely different again. So it really depends on how many products you have, the type of people going there, things like that. Then the other thing, the flip side to that, if you have a $1,000 product, you probably don't want to lead with, oh, this product's $5,000 at the top. So you want to give them the good feeling first. So it's always, I might say one thing, but then it depends on the niche.
Yeah, the context changes.
Yeah, things like that. Then the product page, You want to have all the information about the product. You want to make it easy to read and stuff like that. So you want to break up some of the information with images and things like that. Maybe put some of the information into tabs and things like that. You want to have shipping return information, because a lot of people, you think about it, even you might think, oh, I really like this product, but how quickly can I get it? Can I get a refund if I don't like it? So if all this information is on the page, they don't have to go look for it. Then building trust, so reviews. I really like Luke's Reviews as a Shopify app. It's my favorite. It's the only app that stood the test of time. It's the only app that I still use from 5 or 6 years ago when I started this agency. So I really, those guys really have good connection and stuff with them. So if you want a review app, Luke's Reviews is awesome. And then benefits. So if you have benefits to the product, you want to display them as well. The third one, site navigation. Just want to make it easy and simple. You want to build out your footer as well, because a lot of people will scroll into the footer. So you want to have a lot of your links everywhere into your footer as well. Basically, the main menu, I like to have simple on desktop and built out on mobile. So a lot of themes can't do that. So we'll write some code where you can have a main menu one way for desktop, different way for mobile. Mm. That normally works really well. The fourth one, checkout, just have your logo and your colors. And then mobile, just you want to think about mobile, like the experience. So one big thing that people make a big mistake on with mobile is having heaps and heaps of content. Imagine you land on a website and there's 10 scrolls on your phone of content. So you want to break up that content with images, with headings, because a lot of people skim text as well. So if you have a heading that grabs someone's attention, they might read that paragraph as well. So you just want to break up the text a lot. I think it's a lot easier to actually read text if you break it up like that.
Yeah. These are great tips. That's great stuff. How important is the copy for a site?
I think not as important as 5 years ago, but I think it's still definitely important sort of thing. And then it depends on what product it is as well. So we have some clients where they might have one paragraph in the product description. I don't actually recommend that. I normally recommend you at least have one paragraph, a heading, some bullet points, one paragraph. That's the minimum I think you should have for product description. But for example, if you sell a shirt, like how much product description can you really have sometimes?
Right.
And then if you have 100 shirts, it's hard to have be really built out product descriptions. So you just want to have a lot of the information in tabs and build out a little bit of the product description and stuff. But just to give you an example, some sites making millions of dollars a year that we work on have one paragraph product description, but then they spend like $50,000-$100,000 on images a year. Mm-hmm. So their images are really pushing the ball forward over the content.
I think it's show them, don't tell them.
Yeah, that website, that's why I say sometimes I don't recommend it. But then on the flip side to that is that their images are probably one of the best out of all the 600 websites we've worked on. They're up there with one of the best. It's really about, we built their website to give the person on the website a good feeling about what they're going to buy and where. So it's more about the feeling more than like the content, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get it. Cause you gave a great answer. In my mind, what I was thinking was when you said copy maybe was more important 5 years ago. Now, I think it's about the authentic reviews. And then, like you say, the images, like showing them what it is and then letting other people do the selling for you, essentially. I think that's a huge part of it. When we first talked, I want to see if I can get this back. I didn't even write it. If I wrote it down, I lost it. But you had said something, because we talked about these awards that you won. And you said, oh, I sat down one night and I thought about reasons why someone might come to me. And it was awards, it was reviews, it was certification. Can you talk about that a little bit? I thought that was just great. I think that's a great tip too. Because we've talked, like you said before, about a lot about products, but not so much services. So for the service people, and products too, but for the service people, I think that's just a really powerful thing to think about. Do you remember what I was asking you about? Yeah.
Yeah, it's one big thing I've thought about quite a lot for the last year and a half. So one day I sat down and I was like, why does someone buy something off someone, sort of thing? And I broke it down into, there's probably like 10, 20 things why someone buys something off you. And then someone else, when I actually explained this to them, they actually made me think of another parallel to this as well, which I'll talk about in a sec. But I thought, all right, so think back to when I started my business and stuff like that. It was very hard to get clients. And I think one of the reasons is I had no reviews. So now we have 130 five-star reviews. So imagine approaching someone with 130 reviews over none. So I thought, oh, that's probably a really good selling point when you get... I've thought about the reviews for a while. Sometimes we'll even do a $20 job for someone for free and just be like, I just leave us a review or something, because all these things add up sometimes. So I thought about that. And then I was like, oh, there was this chicken shop in my area and they've won the local business awards like 20 times or something in the last 30 years, right? So they've got 20 trophies in their little chicken shop. And I was like, oh, it made me start to think about rewards and stuff, awards and stuff like that. And I thought, oh, that's probably one reason why someone buys something off you. So for example, in our old office, see that I will on a podcast, see the red award up there?
Yep.
That's like a very big thing in Australia. That's like Australian Champions Awards, right? It's like the Oscars of business awards for Australia, basically. And I had that up on the wall, and I was in a Zoom. And later, the guy said to me, so after we'd done the project and everything, the guy said, there was two reasons you got on a call with this massive company, like it was a really big company in Australia. And he said, there was two reasons. One, you had the Australian Champions Award thing, and then you had 100 reviews. And I was like, it really made me start to think even more about the reviews. It just sort of other awards. So I just kept going down this thing, even podcasts, right? So even just being on podcasts, you think about like when I get on a call with someone, right? So I do the free video audit of people's websites, right? So that builds quite a lot of like, all right, I'm different from everyone else. Everyone else sent text messages, like text emails and stuff, right? I've sent a video. They can see me in the video. There's one thing. Oh, this guy sent me this awesome video reviews. There's one out of 20 things. So then they speak to me in an email. They book a call. I'm on a call with them for an hour. I'm not salesy. I don't send a quote in the call. I try to learn a lot about them. So they're like, oh, that guy wasn't pressuring me into buying something. Then in the time when they book something, they might watch a podcast that I was on. And one of the reasons why I've been going on so many podcasts is because when I was on calls with people, a lot of them were like, hey, I watched your about video and I couldn't and such, and they said all this stuff. And I was like, all right, so people are looking into me before the call a lot. So if you approach it like this, imagine by the time I send a quote, I've sent a free video review, there's one. They've watched a podcast, the about, I've got 130 reviews. I've got 30 plus finalists or winners of awards and stuff like that. I'm a registered Shopify expert. That's rare. So it's, you keep stacking these things on top of each other. By the time you send a quote, it's like you built so much trust, so much rapport with the person. Like it's, yeah, that's what I always thought. And then when I started to realize this and I was explaining it to someone, they're like, you forgot the most important thing about connection and what you look like. So I was like, what? So the connection, like you have a good connection with someone, that's going to help as well. But then the other thing that they was explaining to me is, imagine if you look like the cruelest person in their high school, like that used to bully them, they're probably never going to buy anything off you if they have that bad, like the bad feeling about you. But it also works in the other way. Imagine if you look like the nicest person they ever had, sort of thing. So it's all these other things as well. Yeah, it's just, I just thought it was a combination of everything, and everything stacks on top of itself. So if you're going up against another agency and let's say they have 20 reviews, no awards, they're not a Shopify expert, they've never been on a podcast, there's no about video. Imagine like going up against that person, you're probably going to win, sort of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that's great. Reviews, awards, certifications, being a thought leader, so to speak, on podcasts or something like that, being focused on solving the problem versus making a profit, really connecting with them and showing up looking like a professional in your field. I think that's, I think that's a really powerful checklist.
There was one other thing that I forgot as well. I was laughing about it with someone the other day, looking at the photos I took of myself when I started my business. And I was trying to be like all professional and all that sort of stuff and look professional. And the one thing I've learned is like, when I started to just be myself, I started to get quite a lot more clients because I wasn't being like, not that I was being fake, but maybe I was like trying to be professional. I'm laid back, want to do the right thing for people. So when I just put that wall down and just be myself, like that really helped as well. I just say it how it is, and I am who I am. I don't try to be fake. So
I love that. Be yourself. The world will adjust. Clayton, this has been a great interview. I've got a couple pages of notes. I might even send you a couple of sites to look at for your free audit. Is there anything I have for the people that want the free audit? Where do they go?
Just go inspiresmallbusiness.com. There'll be a page there where you can get it. There's no pressure, no nothing. I'll just send it over. If you want to talk to me, you can. If you don't, that's totally fine. I love doing those videos. And then we're on Instagram, Inspire Small Business. And then if you want free tutorials on YouTube, on Shopify, just go YouTube, Clayton Bates, Shopify Expert. You can get all the stuff there. And I've also loved this chat. It's really been really good talking to you.
Yeah, I know. I like chatting with you too. You got a good vibe. So it's Clayton Bates, Clayton, B as in boy, Bates, Clayton Bates. Clayton, like I said, this has been great. I will probably want to invite you back for a follow-up at some point. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
No, just the only thing I can think of is it's pretty cool that we're finally on a call, considering like when we first arranged the call, I actually nearly died. So yeah, like I was in a hospital and then like I had an infection in my leg and they thought one of the doctors said, oh, we might have to amputate your leg and stuff. So it's like, that's when I think crazy. Of you and I think back to like when I first spoke to you, I'm in hospital, not knowing what's going to go on and stuff. And then now we're here. Thing.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool just how far I even come just from that.
Yeah. And this interview might change lives. There are people that listen to it. I love podcasts because I still get downloads from interviews I did in 2016. Even my wife mentioned to me, this is maybe too much info, but I'm an active sperm donor, we'll say. And I'll avoid all that. But if any of my kids want to get to know me, there's 500 hours of content of me talking to people. Or my daughter, if she feels she didn't know me privately type thing. I was an orphan and I found my mom and my dad, but I don't really know I just think podcasts are a great way to connect, especially with all the censorship that we've dealt with and the nonsense from people with potentially nefarious intentions. I think it's just more important than ever that people connect long form content one-on-one like this. I think that's part of why it's become so popular. So Clayton, thanks so much for making it to be here, hanging in there. And thank you for bringing in, just sharing as candidly as you did, knowing you have your own following, your own staff, your own clients, your own world to take care of. Thank you for coming and sharing with my audience and I, so we can all do better.
No worries. Yeah, I really loved it. Thank you.